I have a couple of just quick reflections of verses. I'd like to thank what I consider all the heroes out there across the whole spectrum of care, whether it's logistical support or healthcare providers or police or fire, everybody that's helping with this COVID crisis. It's really called on a lot of different parts of society that we have to interact with that we may not have had to do much interaction with in the past, but they're really stepping up to help out. And so it's a real testament to everyone's commitment, and it's greatly appreciated. So thank you. And also, I love this quote. You know, during the darkest days of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said that reminded everybody that the sun always shines behind the clouds. And now that we've got the vaccine, I think, you know, it's not going to be too long before we start to see the sun being nice and bright again. It's rough right now, but we're, you know, very optimistic that this vaccination rollout will happen. And as we get everybody vaccinated, starting with the highest risk people working down on a risk stratification basis, that it's going to make a big difference. You know, most of the hospital I work at admission, you know, the vast majority of people are now vaccinated with their first and second vaccinations. And it just gives us a peace of mind as we take care of these people on the front lines every day, the safety of having that. So with that, go ahead. I'm sorry. Does somebody have something to say? First, introductions and announcements. So we have some new committee members. The first is Dr. Schultz mentioned, Eileen Rebecca Gomez, who will represent the city selection committee. She was nominated last night and is still going through the process of being approved by the Board of Supervisors. The next new member is Chief Stuart Greenberg, representing the Orange County Chiefs of Police and Sheriff's Department.
Can I just remind everybody to mute their device so there's some background? Everyone just mute themselves.
Thank you. Yeah, keep yourself muted if you're going to be talking. And then lastly is Robert Vieira, representing the Ambulance Association of Orange County. John, can you mute your microphone?
Yeah, try to.
Thank you. So those are the new members that are joining the committee. Welcome. This is a great committee. I think we do a lot of good work on the backs of Orange County EMS, who puts all this together and does all the heavy lifting. From there, is any other introduction we need to make? Carl, it says introduction of new Orange County EMS staff. Is there anybody? You're on mute.
There's one person I can think of off the top of my
Jesse.
Head.
Jesse.
Jesse, right. Jesse Allard, who's the new assistant director for the Emergency Medical Services Agency. He's taking Mike DeLobby's position. He's been with us for a couple of weeks and has really sort of hit the ground running. So thank you, Mr. Allard, for doing a super job with very little warm-up.
Okay, well, welcome, Jesse. Thank you. Next, on to number three, which is approval of the minutes from our October 9th meeting. If anybody has any comments, please make them. I've reviewed the minutes, and they seem to be in order, and if there's no opposition, we will approve those.
Do we have a quorum?
Yes.
There we go. Next, Orange County EMS report and correspondence. So first will be the what I like to refer to as the Carl Schultz Show, so the medical director report.
Okay. Yeah, so this is trying to be sort of an overview. There have been a lot of things that have transpired since we met last. We'll get into more in a minute, but just to sort of set the stage, the last time we got together, we were shutting down Fairview. And right now we are massively engaging in bringing up Fairview and expanding it. So it's funny how the difference between the two meetings just from what has happened. So just as a sort of a rough review of what's gone on since our last meeting, we did talk about at that meeting getting a local optional scope of practice to allow the paramedics to administer vaccines. We have since expanded that to EMTs. So now in Orange County, EMTs are able to actually do injections. There are some limitations to what other things around the vaccination process they can do, but it does expand our workforce substantially. So that's a big help. That I want to thank Dr. Graywall for actually putting that together and doing all of the machinations that required. There is a training component that goes with it. I won't get into the details of it, but it's a little more extensive than for paramedics. But again, Dr. Graywall stepped up and has resolved that by sending out material to everyone so that we can get everybody trained and certified up and running. We had to actually, for the first time in my memory, suspend across the board ambulance diversions. This was a result of the increasing number of hours per day and number of hospitals that were going on diversion, and it got to the point that we felt the system was at risk. We were seeing over a third of our hospital capacity offline, so we still had 450 911 calls and a bunch of non-911 calls going to fewer and fewer hospitals. And so as the diversion time breached 200 hours, which it's never done before, we had to intervene, and that's where we are currently. There is still no diversion that's being permitted by hospitals. On a rare occasion, if there is a fire or a power failure across the board, unable to provide patient care, we will put hospitals on diversion for internal disaster, but that's sort of where things stand now. Otherwise, we are simply asking everyone to step up and do their part, understanding that this is a horrendous time and that there are lots of compromises that are required by all participants to make this work. Is sort of related to that, one of the other issues we tried to do to move things along and sort of support the EMS system is we allowed ambulances that had been sitting on the ramp at hospitals who had not been offloaded yet, if they'd been waiting more than an hour, we authorized them to go ahead and leave and go to another hospital that might be able to take them. We also authorized those who are on the wall with a BLS patient that had been on the wall for more than an hour, if they met certain criteria, they could basically notify the charge nurse and let them know they were putting the patient in the waiting room, and then they were authorized to leave. So those are all things we've never done before that we are basically trying to find solutions that are still reasonably safe, but help to support the ambulances and the pre-hospital care providers so that we don't all end up getting stacked up like airplanes at LAX. And the other thing, and I'm just going to mention it, and I think we'll have other people provide details, but we've tried to persuade the cities to open pods, and that has not been very successful. No one's fault. It just didn't work as we had anticipated. And so we are now opening super pods at various locations. I think everybody knows about Disneyland being the first one, but we'll have more discussion about that later, but just wanted to bring that up. We are moving forward with these max vaccination centers, and they've been reasonably successful to date. And that's about all I have at this point.
Thanks, Carl. Next up on the agenda is the hospital diversion report, or the annual report for 2020, which is attachment number 2 that was emailed to the committee members.
I can take that and just give a real brief report. You can kind of thumb through and kind of see what 2020 looked like throughout the year. It was a year of a lot of different historic events. The first part of the report looks at the different areas of the county. We've kind of divided it up, grouped them according to hospital geographically, the north area, west area, coastal and central, and then page 4, the southern area. You can kind of see where during the summer we started seeing a lot of the admits in the hospitals and more diversion hours happening during the summer. And then we kind of got it under control for a while, and then the holidays hit and people were, I'm sure, getting tired of following the following the recommendations. So we started seeing another spike, and that kind of really peaked in December. Actually, and then you see the different tables after that for the diversion hours broken down by facility. And then the on page 6 is kind of the last few years. So when I say historical data, you can see the significant increase in December. Got a total of 2,286 hours countywide for the month of December. And there were certain periods during December where we had the no diversion directive in place. So even with that, we still were seeing an incredible amount of diversion going on throughout the county. The next, page 7, is the trauma diversion. And fortunately, the trauma centers have been very effective at managing the trauma hours. That one peak in July is one trauma center that had zero beds in their facility. So they did for a short while have to go on diversion, unable to take any patients at all. But as you can see, the rest of the year for trauma has been pretty stable. We continue to monitor diversion daily. We include that information. We do have diversion. We continue to report on that daily in our OARC report. And as Dr. Schultz mentioned, from time to time, if a facility does have some type of significant event, an urgent need to divert, like internal disruption, like flooding or something like that, then their facility calls our EMS duty officer, who's available 24/7, and we're able to put them on that diversion until the situation is taken care of.
Let me ask you a question about that, just kind of for clarification for everybody. So while we have the no diversion policy, what metrics do you look at to say, you know, it looks like things are going okay, maybe we can turn this back on? Is it APOD times or the number of calls? Or
it's that. It's APOD time. What's going on with the other facilities. We did see a significant amount. I don't want to take away from the APOD report because I know that's next on the agenda, but we did see a gradual increase in the delay of offloading patients, and it wasn't just a few facilities. At one point in the first week in January, we had 22 facilities on diversion, and a total of,
out of what, 27?
Out of 25.
Out of 25, wow.
And we were up to 284 hours for that one 24-hour period. So those are some of the metrics that I know Dr. Schultz looks at and kind of discusses on, you know, are we really, looking at what we need to look at to determine if we have an issue. We had a lot of discussion, as I'm sure a lot of the other facilities have, what's going on in the surrounding counties and some of the things that they've been doing to mitigate the surge of patients. And nothing's off the table, but we really are trying to manage the offloading of the patients and to keep all the hospitals hopefully sharing the burden.
Great. Well, thank you. Next is the ambulance patient offload times APOT, annual report for 2020, attachment number 3. You want to do that, David, or is that going to be Carl?
Oh, yeah, this is a little off. I'm in the AOC, sorry.
Thank you.
So I'll go ahead and direct your attention to the APOT report, the annual APOT report, which includes each monthly report throughout the year. The most interesting one is the final page for December, where our APOD times are significantly higher, as we all expected based on tracking this on a daily basis. our APOT times were significantly increased. Median 90 percentile countywide of 41 minutes, with 45 minutes in the aggregate. I want to note that our ENS transports for the month of December were the highest that they've ever been since we've been recording them in our electronic medical record system. We had a total of 1,624 incidents with APOT times that were greater than 30 minutes, which is double the previous month, and 956 transports with an APOT time greater than 60 minutes, which is also double or even triple the month before or other months prior. So this is pretty well expected, being that we've been seeing this throughout the month of December. Many of these types of trends are continuing into January, although we have seen a little bit of a plateauing of APOT times since the beginning of the year.
Great. Thank you for that report. Any question from any of the committee members on APOT or diversion? If not, next is EMS correspondence. You want to do that, Carl?
Yeah, that's pretty quick. There's some letters from OCFA that you can review. It's a fairly lengthy document. We had to upload it in sections in various places, but we have submitted that for filing, and it's available for review.
Great. Next on the agenda is the EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports. Facilities met November 10th.
Yeah, I'll handle that. The issues that came up predominantly had to do with the use of Binex Now testing. This was initially more controversial than it turned out to be, and at the time there was some issue about false positives and how reliable was it. But over time, the experience with it justified its use for screening purposes, and so hospitals were authorized to go ahead and use this particular test if they wanted to screen employees. This became an issue because the CDPH required all facilities to screen all their employees every week, and that's a pretty tall order. It was tough enough for the SNFs to do that, but for hospitals with sometimes thousands of employees, it's a tall order. So they were looking at other options, and that was one of them, and it stood the test of time, and we're not hearing too much about it anymore, but that was something that came up, and basically we felt that it was a useful tool, and they should be using it or could be using it if they so chose. The other thing that came up was the APOT time, and they discussed that we're going to be moving forward with the standard, and subsequently the transportation the subcommittee did authorize 30 minutes. So we're in the process of trying to formulate a EMS policy that will lay out this issue, but it will be 30 minutes once we get the policy written.
And that's, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the metric that we sort of followed already, was the 30 minutes. Is that correct?
That's correct. And traditionally, we have fallen below that, which is good, for years. The past December was the first time that I'm aware of it in 5 years that we haven't been able to meet that. So it's ordinarily, in normal times, it's pretty reasonable. Obviously, this particular, we're not going to be looking
at it. It's not normal times.
Yeah, these are not normal times. Correct.
Got anything else from facilities? So the Binex testing and APOT times?
No, that was about it.
Great. Any questions on that from anybody? If not, unfinished business. So the first was disaster resource centers.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have Dr. Alma's Sheikh take that one.
Morning, everyone. Thank you for letting me join in on the committee, and I'm happy to give the DRC update, mostly because there isn't much of an update to give, I can tell you. That because of COVID and all the issues that have come up with the COVID surging and sort of all the various ways that the county is being pulled, the DRC project has been put on hold. We will return to our regularly established program once COVID and everything is settled at a place where we can take it back on. The last point that we were at, the public comments had been put in. We had read through all of them, and we heard the messaging loud and clear, and we were in the process of addressing each of those issues. And so once we get back to a place where we can take it on, we will certainly take it back on. So the project is not ended by any means. It's just on pause. That's really about it. I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
All right, well, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Next is the Orange County Ambulance Ordinance.
Is Ms. McConnell on the call? Or is Adrian Rodriguez? Okay, so those are the two individuals that would be most knowledgeable about the issue and where it's going. I can sort of provide a summary. Essentially, there was an objection from the fire chiefs about the ambulance ordinance, and so it has been temporarily taken off the agenda for the Board of Supervisors to review, and we have a meeting scheduled later in this month to meet and go over some of the objections and see if we can resolve the issues and move it forward. We anticipate that, we are hoping that we will be able to get this resolved relatively expeditiously and then get it back before the Board of Supervisors, but I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, so I'll just say that we do have a meeting coming up.
When you click your account, it should say account number, route
name. Can you manage yourself? Is that we're talking? Thank you.
And so that's where that stands at the, at this time. And perhaps, I don't know if Chief Lozier has anything he wants to throw in there. I can throw to him.
No, I think you're spot on. So we'll meet next week and kind of go from there. Yeah, hope to get it wrapped up, like you said, expeditiously.
Great. All right. If there's no other questions or comments, we'll move on to new business. So first is the mobile field hospitals.
I think Mr. Allard, if he's on the call, yeah, he's here. Mr. Allard, could you provide us some updates on that?
Hi there. I'm just positioning the camera. The Mobile Field Hospital, just kind of in short, are vinyl tent-like structures. They come in semi, tractor trailers. They come with generators and toilets and sinks. HVAC systems, lighting, and they're really a really good resource to help acute care hospitals expand their brick and mortar facility. We have been able in the last month, we just received these, so we've never deployed these before. We're definitely have a steep learning curve. I've been employing Dr. Shake, Suzanne Richards, and a bunch of our staff here. We were able to deploy 175 of the 200 beds we have available to five different hospitals. UCI was kind of our guinea pig and did a fantastic job in kind of the planning and preparation, the base flooring of what this tent would sit on. And they took 50 beds. Currently they have 14 in there, but it fluctuates every day for UCI. They even have in the high 30s. So they're definitely utilizing this CDPH approved facility. I think it sounds like the patients appreciate it, and it's better than sitting in a Western shelter. So if we can, we can't help you with staffing enough, if we can at least help increase your capability. St. Jude also took a facility of 50. They haven't gone live yet, unquote. We're just waiting on a few wraparound things to be put into place, but they'll be up and running as well. Fountain Valley is live. They're using theirs a little bit differently than UCI, who's kind of doing a telemed surge, COVID positive and negative setup. Fountain Valley is using theirs as a true ED expansion, and it sounds like they have, at least of this morning, they have four patients in there. They anticipate greater use over the weekend. Then the last is Los Al. Los Al has done a fantastic job in taking one of their parking structures and converting that into an ED expansion. They're putting this mobile field right outside of that to supplement that, and hopefully we'll be able to get 25 beds there. Cardiac monitors, we were able to deploy 140 with these mobile field hospitals, so facilities can use that. It drops the staffing down a little bit when you can monitor a greater number of patients through a central monitoring, and Dr. Graywall was kind of key in leading that effort. So we have one more hospital to deploy. We've worked with about a handful of facilities. Several have said no, not because they don't want it. It's just because they have some staffing barriers. We have a meeting with Mission today to talk about use at that facility. We want to make sure that it's utilized in the greatest capacity. And if there's another facility or vaccine clinic or pod, et cetera, that could use it, we want to make sure that's available. So steep learning curve. I think so far it's been a great success and the community appreciates it.
Thank you. It is greatly appreciated that we're able to utilize this resource. And as you mentioned, the biggest problem is staffing. Next is the Fairview Hospital. You want to add anything, Dr. Schultz?
The entire process is essentially run by the state, so we don't have as much independent and individual input into what goes on there. But I can say that it has been utilized more aggressively by the surrounding hospitals than it has at any time in the previous 3 months it was up and running from the last surge. It's only been open basically 1 month, and we've already exceeded the number of patients total that we saw when it was up and running for 3 months previously. So we're optimistic and we're encouraged. There are a couple of bumps. We're working it out, but nothing dramatic. It, by and large, gets probably an A- as far as how effective it's been. They have expanded their census now. They will be able to take up to 50 people now, which will be a big help. So I'm really grateful to have it online. It seems to be working reasonably well, and in support or in tandem with putting the mobile field hospitals in place. This seems to be a strategy that has optimized our capacity to surge. So I'm grateful to the state for providing this resource to us and staffing it, and then even finding more staff so we can expand to 50 beds.
Great. Any other questions from anybody? Do you know what the current census is? How many people are there as of today or this week?
I monitor that, and there's 25 they have right now.
Okay.
This morning around 6 o'clock, there were 25. They come and go. They get them not just from the hospitals. They also get them from the SNFs and the residential care facilities as well. So they're really helping in decompressing the number of patients that might wind up in the ER. So,
well, that's great. Thank you. Next is the Orange County Fire Chief Support Ambulances and Emergency Departments.
Yeah, I'll take that. Let me get to my unmute button here. I've got my space bar. Hold on.
There you go.
There we go. Okay. So this is a work in progress, but right now we are trying to negotiate a process where fire departments could help support the emergency departments at emergency receiving centers when their ambulances start to accumulate on the ramp and they have no capacity to offload them. This is still in the early stages, but the idea as it's currently being discussed is that certain units from local fire departments would be deployed to the hospitals and would support offloading of ambulances and supervising the patients in this a tent facility or something similar to that. Really gotten a firm proposal yet, and that's what we're in the process of trying to get. I actually sort of looked at the proposal from the fire departments and crafted something in operational language for the hospitals, and we sent that back to the fire departments for their input, and wanted to sort of work out the details of that before we shared it with the hospitals. But it looks like it might be something, should the hospitals actually go ahead and engage, that would allow us to help get more ambulances off the ramp and back in service.
That's great. Great idea.
Dr. Schultz, I'm sorry, this is Luisa Placentia. We could be involved in those discussions as well. As you know, our service provider has the capability of doing this, a great deal of flexibility in our service model that lends itself well to this proposal. So we could have a conversation on that. That's something we could try also in our own hospital here at Placentia Linda as well.
Great. Any other comments or questions on that topic? If not, we'll move on to IMT for management of vaccinations.
Dr. Grewal, are you on the call?
I am.
Perfect. Do you think you could give us an update on where we stand with all the vaccines and the IMT?
Sure. The IMT team, incident management team, was set up. Dr. Chow reached out to the fire agencies and OCFA generously volunteered to participate in this. And what it is they're setting up, they're getting together, where they're all sitting in the conference room right here in downtown Santa Ana, and they're getting together an organized plan to set up these large pods to help mass vaccinate the public. It's a gradual rollout. They're starting with Disneyland, and that's been up and running. I think this is now the third day, and it's been quite successful. As far as moving forward, they're going to open up some more sites that are planned. I think we have some agreements signed, when they're going to get set up, I don't know at this time. But hopefully within the next couple of weeks. I think the rate limiting step on getting this rolled out is actually more amount of vaccination available rather than personnel. We've had quite a large response of volunteers to help vaccinate. Another part of the plan is to try to go mobile and help vaccinate the some of these elderly citizens who cannot really make it out to these large pods and stand in line and such. So that's another component of the plan. In addition, there are we've had participation by a couple of our ambulance companies setting up pods. Care Ambulance has been kind of a go-to when you know, lines have been long in the other pods due to the massive response. Just as an aside, the fire department set up their own pods in OCFA, Huntington Beach, and Anaheim, and they got those as kind of the mini sites, and then now the super sites are coming up. So that's kind of the process on what's going on, and hopefully we can get some more EMS providers involved in some of these activities as well. Care Ambulance has been instrumental. Premier Ambulance has jumped in, and as we can sign in more providers, hopefully we can get more people on board.
Yeah, this is Luis with Valencia. That's a great program. There's over 20 ambulance companies in Orange County, so I think there's plenty of resources there to tap into and assist in that for sure.
Right, and it's all about, you know, getting signed up to be a provider to start with, and then being able to fold these companies in.
You know, one suggestion that I have is I actually tried to go on to sign up to volunteer to help, because I've done a lot of the vaccinations at our hospital. And it was quite a mess to figure out and navigate from the county site how to get to where you volunteer. So it'd be nice if there were a simpler link or shortcut or something out there. Because when you go to the general volunteer site for the county, it lists every volunteer opportunity there is, which there's literally hundreds for all sorts of projects. So either push that up to the top of that list if people are going there, or have an alternative thing. And then the only other comment is just helping my own in-laws is that, you know, an 80-year-old trying to log into a site to set up a vaccination appointment is a challenge. And with the seniors, you know, because they called and said, what's my email address? And, you know, I mean, you've got to get a text verification, so on and so forth. So it would be nice if there's some help for them as well. Hopefully people's families will step up, but you know, there's plenty of seniors that are on their own that may not have the help.
You know, Mike, when I went in to sign in, I actually went to the search bar and just searched vaccine, and it came up. But I agree, it's not simple, and the process is not easy either to get callbacks and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and it's a logistical nightmare trying to coordinate all this, and I appreciate everything that everybody's doing, and the bugs will get worked out, but those are just a couple of my own observations.
Yeah, this is Chief Lozier. I think one thing also too that we're trying to message is there's the Athena app for the SuperPod, but also for our older, our 65 and olders to check in with their primary care physicians as well and their pharmacies to see if that's available there. You hear mixed messages if they have it or not, but it's at least an avenue to pursue. So I think between the healthcare agency, the incident management team, and the volunteer pool, establishing a staffing pattern and then the vaccine supply, all those are trying to be consistently worked out, and it is a very fluid situation. So we're doing well as far as getting a lot of numbers through, but we have a lot more to do, and hopefully that cracks open to a bigger portion here over the next week or two.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that update.
Yeah.
Any other comments from anybody on the vaccination process?
You know, as far as the site, the volunteer, I agree with you. It's not as prominent as perhaps it should be, but if you just go, you know, the standard route about COVID and go to the vaccine page, there is a link right in there about volunteering.
The COVID vaccine, okay.
Yeah, so, and honestly, you know, to be fair to you, I went into it because I thought it would be there, and I scrolled down and I totally missed it. It's one line in the middle of all of it. But it's there.
Right. And, you know, it might be nice just from EMS, because there's a lot of people on your distribution list, to send out just a brief memo that says, you know, here's a volunteer opportunity to help, because I'm sure they need plenty of healthcare providers from EMTs up to physicians. So maybe it would be a simple way to get it to go for them.
Yeah, that's
been
done.
All right.
Great.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions on the vaccination process? I applaud everybody for all the efforts. You know,
I have a question. Could Eileen maybe send that link out again? Because I never received that first link, so I think maybe a little redundancy might help get more volunteers.
I was trying to unmute myself. Yes, I will send out the link for the volunteers, and actually I think I have a flyer for it and would be more than happy to send it out.
And just double check that it doesn't take you to the general volunteer section, because there is a lot of opportunities. It's not clear which one is for the vaccines. So.
Okay, will do.
Looks like Adrian put something up there. So yeah, if you could send that, if there's a link like that, that's great. You know, just a single click, and then at least all the healthcare people will get it, and they can spread that around at their own institutions.
Yeah, as you were asking, I just checked the link on the OC Health Info website, links to 1OC, and on the home page, it's that. Those volunteers need it.
Great. All right, well, any other questions or comments related to that? If not, we can go into the member comments section. Any of the committee members have any comments that they would like to make to the committee?
This is Luis in Placentia. I had a quick question for the team. Now that the Be Well facility is open, is there any plans to include any EMS plans as putting Be Well as an emergency destination receiving facility?
Yeah, you know, that's a full can of worms, and the opportunity is there, but there's a lot of moving parts to operationalize that from the field. It'll take a fair amount of time and effort to satisfy all the new regulatory requirements that have been put in place. So given all the COVID and all the other demands on the system currently, it's just not been something that we've had the bandwidth to
to address. Going forward at some point when things settle down, that might be something to look at, but it's not going to be something that's going to happen in a few weeks that could be done with a stroke, and it will require a fair amount of process and procedure to set that up.
Thank you, Dr. Schultz. Any other questions or comments from any of the other committee members?
Yeah, this is Chief Lozier. One question, I guess, for the group. And we're working through the ambulance ordinance, and that tied to, I think, anything else that comes up. Is it okay for the group or for us to discuss and provide direction as far as having consistent definitions based upon what we already have established? So anything that would come up, the definition would always remain the same across the any ordinance or policies. They would all refer back to one set of definitions. Just kind of up for discussion here.
You want to jump in, Dr. Schultz?
Yeah, it sounds like it makes sense on its face. I mean, why just have multiple different definitions for the same thing? It's confusing and it seems cleaner. The problem is that the definitions oftentimes meet different needs. And so you would end up with very long, very convoluted definitions to cover all the different circumstances, combinations, permutations. And it's not, in my view, as simple as just making sure that we're all consistent, because the way the definitions are worded can have some profound impacts on policies and procedures going forward that may actually address other issues. So I think it's not a, in my view, it is a somewhat complicated issue and might not necessarily be the answer by simply using a standard definition. But again, that's just my view of it.
Any other comments or questions from anyone? If not, we'll move on to the public forum. Anybody else that's attending the meeting, do they have any comments or questions for the committee or Dr. Schultz?
Hi. Yeah, good morning, everyone. This is Pat Powers. Thank you very much.
Okay, it's like a seance. Can you hear us or see us?
Looks like you froze.
You did.
Patrick, your
bandwidth. I think my bandwidth, but I wanted to thank everyone at Orange County EMS for the great job they're doing, and just recognize the difficult time we're in together, and I look forward to being part of the recovery with everyone. Thank you.
I will second that. It is an overwhelming job that has been thrust on them, and they're very proud of all their accomplishments and their efforts to try and work through this the best possible.
Yeah, I just want to echo Pat's comments, Dr. Grewal, Dr. Schultz, everybody who's been supportive of the initial kickoff for the vaccines and working through all the different processes and the communications and everything that's gone along with it. It's been a huge lift, but everybody's trying to row in the same direction, and we're going to get there, but just everybody. Appreciate everybody's willingness to go after it. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from anybody else attending the meeting?
Just a quick thought.
No, Carl's frozen. There you go.
Oh, okay. Is that any better?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I noticed that Danielle Ogaz was in the background when
you're frozen again, Carl. Oh, there you go. Now you're moving.
How's that? Is that any better?
That's going.
All right. So I just wanted to see if Ms. Ogaz had any comments or issues that she wanted to bring forward to the group regarding the health emergency management or any other related issues. Okay. The answer is no.
Okay. No problem. Well, before the meeting started, I actually was kind of joking around with everybody how this meeting is like a seance, and you know, one of the things, the lingo that you hear, you know, Tom, everyone's here, make a sound if you can hear us. So with that, we will end the meeting. Our next meeting is Friday, April 9th. I suspect it will be a Zoom meeting, but the optimistic side of me hopes that we will be able to meet in person again someday. And it'll be to be determined depending on how the pandemic is playing out. So thanks to everybody and have a safe weekend.
Thank you.
Bye. Be safe.
Bye.
Thank you.
Take care, y'all. Thank you for the
meeting. Eileen, are you still?
Yes, I am, Dr. Gibbs.
Call.
I still show her, well, she was.
No, I'm still here.
Yeah, hey, Eileen. Hey, Eileen.
There we go. Now I'm unmuted.
Okay. This is David. I was here the whole time. My case
I know.
Was a patient illness, so I was on my iPhone at first. So.
Okay.
And then I turned on the video briefly, and then I realized, oops, that shows me in a car. Not a good thing.
Okay, no, I have you down.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.